Good afternoon. It's Mountain Edition. I'm Marcy Quivenin.
And I'm Elise Thatcher. The USA Pro Challenge returns to Aspen.
With help from a small army of volunteers.
For the most part, it's just sitting there being very bored until for about 10 seconds while the riders are going past you, you're very busy.
Hazy air also arrives this week from fires in the Pacific Northwest.
We hear from a painter who also wrote lyrics for Elton John.
I'm going to do it because I think that might be cool. It might suck. It might look like crap.
The Aspen Music Festival and School gets ready to wrap up another season.
Carbondale commuters deal with a restricted popular park and ride.
And an Aspen developer drops an affordable lodge plan to avoid a ballot measure.
That's coming up on Mountain Edition. More than 150 professional cyclists have pedaled out of the Roaring Fork Valley. They're racing in the fifth year of the USA Pro Challenge. Pro riders took off from Aspen mid-morning Thursday for a demanding day back up and over Independence Pass to Breckenridge.
Racers already tackled the pass Wednesday on their way to Aspen. Boulder rider Kiel Reinen won that stage. He competes for the United Healthcare team and says training on Independence Pass paid off.
Brent Bookwalter of Team BMC is still in the overall lead as of Thursday morning. Aspen resident TJ Van Garderen won the event last year. He's not racing this year to save energy to compete in a European tour.
The USA Pro Challenge brings not just professional cyclists, but also visitors, vendors, and infrastructure. To put the event on for 2 days, the city of Aspen relies heavily on volunteers.
You're supposed to be course marshaling?
Volunteers trickle into headquarters in downtown Aspen early Wednesday. At the registration table, they grab lanyards and get directions.
Slow and steady right now. Everyone's excited and it's good.
Beth Hansen normally works in a city office, but today she's checking in volunteers. City employees like her make up about half of the volunteer effort for the Pro Cycling Challenge. Maddie Overton is the volunteer coordinator for the event.
City Hall is closed, so they offer to have people volunteer and get their hours converted into day's work of hours so that they don't lose that time.
So technically, some people are getting paid, but others, like Don Child, won't get a paycheck.
I volunteered for this race a couple of years ago, and I volunteered for the Amgen Tour race, so I just enjoy being around bicyclists and just watching.
He grew up in Aspen but lives in Hawaii. Today, he's a course marshal. He'll be stationed east of Aspen along the race course.
For the most part, it's just sitting there being very bored until for about 10 seconds while the riders are going past you, you're very busy. And then you have about 20 minutes of telling everybody, wait, until the last of the support cars go through.
There's a variety of volunteer jobs, from collecting trash to answering questions from the public, but volunteer coordinator Maddie Overton says course marshaling is the most important and hardest job to fill.
You're out there for a while. You're also working with people on foot, on bike, or in car who maybe are not as excited about having to be detoured or delayed. And they're the people who facilitate everyone getting into town and the riders themselves getting into town without any accidents or issues.
So let's talk about what goes where.
Across town, a group of Aspen students is getting prepped ahead of their volunteer gig at Pepke Park.
Cups like this.
There.
What do you think? Compost. How do you know?
Because it's cardboard.
Because it's cardboard and it actually says, what does it say
it
there?
It says compost.
Compostable.
They will help people in the park sort their trash into different bins for compostables and recyclables. The students are athletes on the football, volleyball, softball, and cross-country teams. Ron Moorhead is coordinating this effort.
They've come out after training. They don't start school until next week or classroom, but they started this week doing their preseason training.
So this volunteer gig is sort of part of their athletic training?
Yes, and we try and promote volunteerism in this town. It's a big part of our culture, and the earlier you get them going, the easier it is for them to continue that.
Adair Patillo and Nina Beidelman are on the cross-country team. They're working together at a trash station.
Well, I really love this event.
And I've been following the race for a while, and so it's awesome to be a part of the race and volunteer and help out, I guess.
Yeah, I really love watching the bike racers go. My dad always talks about it. He has all these things. He knows all the people really well that bike in the race, so it's super cool to help out and be a part of it.
While there's plenty of free labor, the event itself costs the city of Aspen money. This year, town government threw down $125,000 as a subsidy. It's worthwhile, city officials say, because it gives the resort town international exposure. And it may make a return. Mayor Steve Scadron was on stage at the end of Wednesday's race.
Well, Mayor, 5 years with the USA Pro Challenge. What do you think about a sixth year to bring the race back to town?
Yes. If the locals in Aspen want it, we'll get it done. So thank you, everybody.
On Thursday, the cyclists will take off from downtown, headed to Breckenridge.
Hazy conditions in the Roaring Fork Valley and in other areas on the western slope are from wildfires burning in the Pacific Northwest.
All day Wednesday, Aspen Environmental Health Specialist Jeanette Whitcomb was checking the air quality in town. Two monitors track ozone and particulate matter. Despite the smog, monitors recorded good air quality.
So yeah, the levels have gotten up higher than normal because of the fires, but they haven't gotten to unhealthy ranges.
If the air quality reaches unhealthy categories, people with respiratory illnesses, children, the elderly, and ultra athletes are at risk. The National Weather Service reports the haze will stick around today and start to break up Friday. There's a link on our website for real-time updates of Aspen air quality.
Major support for Aspen Public Radio's environmental reporting comes from the John Denver Aspen Glow Fund at the Aspen Community Foundation, promoting responsible stewardship of the lands and wilderness of Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley.
One of Aspen's gas stations will not be torn down for an affordable lodge. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Sakharyson reports.
Developer Mark Hunt on Wednesday officially withdrew his Base 2 Lodge project, even though it was already approved by Aspen officials. Instead, he will submit a new application for a two-story commercial building. That's to replace the Conoco on Main Street, across from Carl's Pharmacy.
I didn't move to Aspen to start fights, and that's what this approval has launched, a contentious political fight that splits the community.
Aspen City Council approved the lodge in June. It included breaks to the land use code, like allowing the building to be twice its allowable size. In response, citizens collected enough signatures for a referendum that would have forced elected officials to rescind their approval or put it on the ballot for voters to decide. But now neither has to happen. Hunt tells Aspen Public Radio that he plans to build Base 1 Lodge, contrary to earlier statements. It's already been approved for a parcel Hunt owns across from City Market on Cooper Avenue. Carolyn Sakharyson, Aspen Public Radio News.
Carbondale's Park and Ride is already very popular. In fact, it's often overflowing. But commuters are dealing with even fewer parking spots for the next 3 months.
That's because the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority is expanding the lot, but needs room for equipment and workers during construction. Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bektesh has more.
69 new parking spaces are being created at the Carbondale Park and Ride, along with additional bike parking and restroom facilities for drivers and the public. RAFTA Facility Director Mike Herms says he hopes this will help fill a need, at least for a year or two.
Our parking lot is over capacity almost every single day, and so we're trying to help meet that demand.
Currently, commuters who can't find a spot at the park and ride must park somewhere in downtown Carbondale and take the local circulator bus to get to the BRT station, a problem that will be temporarily exacerbated during the expansion project, because a quarter of the existing spaces are closed during construction.
Yeah, there'll be a little pain before we can make it better, but we kind of have to go at it that way.
Herm says the expansion project shall be completed by Thanksgiving. RAFTA purchased private land adjacent to the existing lot for the expansion. 80% of the $1.2 million project is funded by CDOT's FASTER grant program through motor vehicle registration fees. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Snowmass Village residents are generally happy with their quality of life and feel safe in town. Those are the findings of a new community survey.
This is the third time Snowmass has conducted such a survey. It's like a report card for town government, giving full and part-time residents as well as visitors a chance to rate services like transit and public safety. Travis Elliott is with the town of Snowmass. He helped get the word out about the survey.
Overall feeling of safety was our number one rated attribute, and we actually have 90% responding that they are satisfied or very satisfied with the overall feeling safety.
Respondents would like to see the town improve its communications about town happenings. The survey was previously conducted in 2007 and 2013. From now on, it'll be done every other year.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elise Thatcher. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. This is the final week of the Aspen Music Festival and School. All summer, we've been profiling young musicians as they make their way to campus to hone their skills and to the tent to perform. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort completes our series, Time Signatures, Measures of Tomorrow's Musicians.
Jalen Lee is a recent graduate of the University of Cincinnati, where she studies viola performance. She's going back there in the fall to get her master's. She's been playing the viola since she was in fifth grade. At her high school, she experienced the moment when she knew music was her calling while playing Fantasia on a theme. She says that if she didn't have such a good experience playing a good repertoire, she wouldn't have ended up playing music.
I got to play the viola solos, and that was like, I think that was when I knew that I wanted to major in music.
This is her third consecutive year in Aspen. She says she knows the ropes and there's a good bit of continuity that makes coming back a little easier. Her instructor in college is also her instructor in Aspen. The person teaching her has had a few years without interruption, allowing her to refine her technique even more. In addition to her classical pursuits, she just started playing in a bluegrass band back home. They play contra dances, which is basically like square dancing. The group is still trying to come up with a name. She's a big fan of contemporary bluegrass bands like the Punch Brothers, led by Chris Thiele, who's also in Nickel Creek, another renowned bluegrass band. That's Missy by the Punch Brothers. When she isn't working on intense pieces like Mahler's Symphony No. 5 for this weekend's final performance, she likes to admire the houses in Aspen's West End.
I don't know, I just love the town. I love looking at all the houses. Like, I'll just walk around by the tent and just kind of admire.
Do you have one that you really like?
No, none specific one. There's that amazing flower garden on 4th Street. That's my favorite.
She has no lofty goals just yet, but eventually she'd like to perform professionally. Doesn't matter where, she'll be happy just to be playing.
In the future, I'm honestly open to anything, but I would love to play in an orchestra. It doesn't have to be the New York Phil, it doesn't matter. Anyone that'll take me.
She's also preparing to climb and hike her very first 14er this weekend, La Plata Peak.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm really scared, but it'll be fun.
Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.
The Arts and Culture Desk at Aspen Public Radio is funded by the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation with a mission to support the arts, community, and outreach.
Basalt residents may consider buying land downtown, but they won't be able to cast a vote until April. It's the latest wrinkle in what to do with the Pan and Fork parcel next to the Roaring Fork River.
David Fitzgerald handles IT for a major real estate firm in the Roaring Fork Valley. On Friday, he said he supports a public vote to buy some of the Pan and Fork land.
Do I want a hotel there? Not so sure I do that. That can go over to Willits. But hotel would probably bring some life here in the core, which we need.
The land in question is now privately owned by the Roaring Fork Community Development Corporation. It's next to land owned by the town of Basalt.
It would be very tough for us to construct a question that we can put on the ballot.
There's just too many unknowns.
That's town manager Mike Scanlon. In order for Basalt and its residents to have the power to decide what goes on both sections of land, the town needs to buy the private land. So a ballot measure would be a tax measure, which requires a lot of steps.
We would have to negotiate the purchase of the property. Part of that would require us to get an appraisal. And having done appraisals over the last 2 years in the Roaring Fork Valley, that's going to be 30 to 45 days.
And the first deadline for getting something on the fall ballot is about a week away. Colorado law says April would be the next time Basalt could consider a tax measure. Scanlon says it's hard to have the exact language until the town knows what would be done with the property.
Let's agree to what it is that will be allowed there. Just solve that question. And once you decide it, everything else sort of falls into place.
Like what kind of taxes can be used to pay for it. On Friday, a representative of the private landowner could not be reached for comment. The developer hoping to build a hotel on the property says it's fine to put plans on hold until an April ballot measure. Now, Basalt Town Council will have to decide whether to pursue the public vote.
An ongoing public dispute in the Mid-Valley is leading to innovations in the fledgling marijuana cultivation industry. Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bektesh reports.
Residents in the Holland Hills neighborhood are angry about the pot odor they say comes from greenhouses at High Valley Farms, off Highway 82 near Basalt. The smell has been a problem for residents since the operation opened months ago.
No, wait, I'm sorry.
They are very angry. During a Pitkin County Commissioner's work session last week, residents said the odor is so overwhelming and so detrimental to their quality of life that they suggest
shutting them down until it's resolved, until they can prove that they can have an odorless business.
At their work session in June, the commissioners gave High Valley Farms owner Jordan Lewis 60 days to mitigate the odor coming from his four greenhouses. It's caused by the organic compound terpene released as marijuana plants bud. The greenhouses had been equipped with a mist vapor system Lewis admits was inadequate, and a dry vapor system, which he said worked, but replaced the terpene odor with an equally fragrant neutralizing agent. Lewis says the goal has always been to install a biological compound-based system, set to be installed August 23rd, just weeks away from the farm's license renewal date. He explained the system at last week's meeting.
The good thing is that the hydroxyl technology differs from the neutralizing agent in a very key way, and that is the hydroxyl in and of itself has absolutely no odor. So we have designed a system that can handle 10 times the calculated load of terpenes, and we can apply that in the greenhouse before it even exits.
Innovations such as the one Lewis proposes are key in an industry just entering its second year. If there is a way to eliminate the terpene odor, a growing list of businesses would benefit from that type of technology. Ron Camerzell, the senior director of Colorado's Marijuana Enforcement Division, points out similar resident complaints in Denver have resulted in more restrictive odor laws.
Denver has changed their ordinances to require, when they exhaust air from the cultivations, that they require filter systems.
Lewis told the commissioners his company has invested financial and personnel resources to adapt the hydroxyl technology, typically used on cruise ships' trash storage facilities, to the greenhouse environment. It could be an expensive risk, particularly with the looming license renewal deadline. Local authorities have jurisprudence over marijuana licensing, and the county commissioners could deny a license renewal for the business, which supplies product for the Silver Peak Apothecary in Aspen.
The cost of doing this, the intellectual resources that had to be put into this, we drove a process that by any reasonable means should have taken a year, and we're getting this done in a five-month period.
But it's a risk that just might have significant payoff, says Pitkin County Commissioner Steve Child, not just for businesses in Colorado and other legal grow states, but also for medical marijuana and home grow operations, at least two of which have been identified in the Holland Hills neighborhood.
There's over 3,000 medical caregivers registered in the state of Colorado. They're all over the place growing the six plants for different individuals, so they have a whole lot of plants in their operations. And we don't have regulations that cover them. That's why I'm thinking that if this ionizer process works for marijuana smells, anybody who grows marijuana could have one of them in their basement, in their garage, in their warehouse, wherever they are growing it, and it just has to be sized properly. We could solve this problem for everybody potentially. I would love to have that be the end result.
The commissioners will take another look at the High Valley Farms odor complaints when they consider the license renewal application September 23rd. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
There's high demand for local food in the Roaring Fork Valley, but there's not enough to meet that need. Results from a six-month study show a need to increase local food production through supporting new and beginning farmers.
Gwen Garcelon heads the Roaring Fork Food Policy Council, which initiated the analysis. I spoke with her this week. What does the local food picture look like? What's available and what kinds of foods are being grown in the Aspen to Parachute area?
It's quite diverse. There's a very large organic farm, Eagle Springs Organic in Rifle. They probably have the most diverse. I mean, they're doing melons and, you know, they've got big greenhouses where they can do a lot of things. But then you look at a permaculture operation like the Colorado Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute on the side of a cliff in, on Basalt Mountain. They're growing figs and papayas and avocados and, you know, bananas. And so it's quite diverse, but the supply is not great. So we don't have the capacity to supply our schools and restaurants and hospitals.
I mean, are schools asking for local food? I mean, what does the demand look like?
The demand is growing by leaps and bounds because people really understand the value. The farmers markets are well attended. There are more farm stands starting. People want to get their hands on local food.
And you mentioned the problem is supply. What are the barriers to increasing supply?
Well, it's very tough for new farmers to make a go of it. The land prices are high. Their margins of error are very slim. And it's a tough job. And so getting the support structures in place that can allow for a beginning farmer to be successful, that's taking an all-hands-on-deck kind of approach. Much like it is, difficult for a teacher to make a go of it. You know, we've got to look at how can we help them with housing? How can we help them be successful? Because they're an absolutely necessary part of our society. And so one of the things that's clear that would be a great support here is something called an online farmers market. Any kind of a grower or producer can put on what they've got to offer, any quantity, and a consumer can say, I'll take some of that, I'll take some of that, I'll take some of that. And it allows for building that distribution system and that connection of the local food producers with the consumers in a way that our local food system really needs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gwen Garcelon is with the Roaring Fork Food Policy Council. Pitkin, Eagle, and Garfield counties pitched in to help pay for the local food study. This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Marcy Griffin, and to stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
One of the last major art shows of the summer in Aspen concluded last weekend, and some high-profile names were there, but maybe not ones you would expect. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort reports.
What if I told you that the guy who wrote the words to this? Is now doing modern art. The man behind Elton John's pipes and odd lyrical flair is still very much active, but now instead of being behind the scenes, he's putting his work on stage. A collection of his work hung in the Aspen Ice Garden this past weekend as one of the first sets of works visitors saw when they came to Art Aspen. Bernie Taupin, the lyricist and part of the songwriting duo that scored so many hits, is now a modern artist. using paint, wood, wax, and even bubble wrap to create large pieces of work that have been selling for thousands of dollars.
Are you familiar with who Bernie Taupin is?
No.
He's actually the lyricist for Elton John.
Where's he from?
Despite what he might say himself, people don't really know who Bernie is when it comes to the visual arts. It might even be tough to find a lot of people who know him even when you put his name together with Elton John. But when you ask Bernie himself what he thinks about being in the art world, he'll tell you that it's something that's been part of his life for as long as he can remember, maybe longer than his music career.
You know, when I traveled to New York, living a transient lifestyle with a rock and roll band, you know, we didn't have any money back then. And so the easiest places for us to go in the winter of 1970, say, for instance, you know, I would go and hide out in the Museum of Modern Art and spend hours there.
So after those glamorous days of rock and roll were over, he converted an old racquetball court into a studio where he makes his art. One piece called The Shipwreck News is made up of wood scraps, cheesecloth, dirt, and charcoal dust, all held together with wax. When he put the piece together, he said he didn't know how things would turn out. But sometimes that's a good thing.
I'm going to do it because I think that might be cool. It might suck. It might look like crap. But, you know, if it looks like crap, then I'll strip the canvas and rework it. But if it works and it looks really cool, then great.
Carol Stewart, a local art teacher at the show Saturday, was stirred by the piece and said this to Bernie's representative, Dana.
This piece against the wall reminds me of Anselm Keeper.
Yeah.
Anselm Keeper.
That's one of his inspirations,
uh-huh,
too.
And when I walked in, that's what struck me, because he's one of my favorite artists. And I was drawn to those pieces first.
If we would have had a video camera on the booth this whole time, everybody stops and looks at that one.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie says his creative process is very much a session of trial and error. He has notes to himself on the walls of his studio reminding him to know when to stop. One extra mark here or there could ruin an entire piece. It's like adding too much salt to your dinner. It tastes fine until there's too much. Depending on what he's trying to accomplish, he'll play a huge range of music while he creates pieces. For something that requires a bit more nuance and a gentle hand, he might play some Miles Davis. But if he needs to get angry with a piece, as he says, he'll go to something a bit more aggressive, like Charles Mingus. He says seeing his art in a gallery is like seeing it for the first time. He can't hang it like they do, and can't light it like they do. It's an entirely new experience for him when it's installed by professionals.
You know, it's akin to that kind of thing when you made your first record and you took it home and you went, whoa, that's cool. You should always have that same feeling about what you do. If what you achieve, what you create, doesn't inspire that kind of reaction in you, you shouldn't be doing it.
Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. Have a nice afternoon. I'm Marcy Krivenin.
And I'm Elise Thatcher. To hear this show again or download a Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.